1, 2, 3, 4.
The following is an interview with Vera Hirschberg, H-I-R-S-C-H-B-E-R-G, Director of Women's Programs on the staff of Ann Armstrong, Counselor to the President. The interview was conducted by Susan Yowell in Mrs. Hirschberg's office on the first floor of the old Executive Office Building, May 10th, 1974.
Obviously, it's not a good idea in the middle of an administration to talk about personalities and this kind of information.
When I left here the last time, I was a speech writer. We didn't do that then.
When did you meet?
I guess it was March of 73.
March of 73? Should have been that.
Or maybe it was late February of 73.
It should have been. We started this project in 1971. I couldn't tell you the time of the first person that did it. It was probably in spring of 71.
You didn't catch me.
Well, we do miss people sometimes. But we'll go back to that then. Okay, when did you first join the staff?
Mrs. Armstrong.
Well, you might as well go back at this point.
May 5th, 1972.
And at that time, you were in what position?
Speech writer on the writing and research.
Not close, sure. That's going to make
close this door, Harry. There's something to do here.
I avoid it, woman.
Let me see.
Harry, excuse me, could you please help us close the door?
Oh, yes.
Take me with you.
Okay. Okay, girls. No doubt, right, this is all the...
It's shrine for history.
Okay.
Okay. You started on May 5th, 1972.
Right. Yes, I was a reporter on National Journal, and I had heard that there was an opening. We wanted a woman for the speechwriting staff. I believe it was the first time that they had ever had a woman speechwriter on the president's speechwriting staff. So I applied, little thinking that I'd get the job. And I had done, I did two sample speeches for Mrs. Nixon. And she liked them, and I did get the job. So there I was. And that lasted throughout the 72 campaign. And I did speeches during that period until, I guess, February when I left, or March, I'm not sure, for the president, for the family, Mrs. Nixon, Julie, Tricia, Ed Cox, and whomever else I had to do speeches for, people here on the domestic council sometimes, surrogates, and so on. Sometimes we did three speeches a day, just pounding them out.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any particular subject areas that you were working in?
Everything. All of the different areas of the administration was interested in pushing, depending on the event, of course. If it was an environmental event, we had to do research on accomplishments in the environment, and if it was, say, a transportation event, the same thing held. If it was an old people's or senior citizens event, we had to have this at our fingertips, the facts. And it was very useful. I don't know if you have it here still, but we used the Republican National Committee campaign fact book. We used a fact book compiled by the research people on our own staff, which was excellent. We used Mr. Ehrlichman's briefing book. And so we had these things at our fingertips. We didn't have the great expertise, but we had enough facts in order to make the speech believable and so on. And that ended, and because of my expertise in transportation, I went over, Bud Krogh asked me to go over to the Transportation Department to serve with him.
Before you go to that, may I ask you, when you were hired as a speechwriter, was that just to cover the campaign period?
No, it was not. It was, at least that was, the understanding was that it would be a long-term position. And then as you remember, we all had a turn, you are here, we all had a turn on resignations in. And I resigned, as did everyone else. And then a decision was made that that I was not to remain on the staff. And because of my expertise in transportation, Bud Krogh, who was, as you remember, Under Secretary of Transportation, talked with me, and I talked with him, and we decided that I could be useful to him over there. So I went over there and was there for a little over 2 months, during which time I did a report for the Secretary of Transportation on the Northeast Railroad problem, which was sent to Congress, and helped Mr. Krogh as a kind of personal assistant. Mm-hmm. And then you know what happened. Mr. Krogh first took a leave of absence from the department and then resigned. And so he had told me that his future might not be too secure there and told me that maybe I might want to stay there or maybe look around. So I heard that Mrs. Armstrong had this opening in the Office of Women's Programs, and I called over and came over and talked with Jill Ruckelshaus, who had said was here for about a month or two, had done the office. And we liked each other immediately, hit it off, and that was that. I came over here.
When you were with the speechwriter staff, do you know why they wanted to recruit a woman? At first you mentioned that you had worked on speeches for the First Lady and
right.
for the daughters, but
I
you
think
worked
we,
on more.
Well, you see, I made it very clear to Ray Price that I didn't want to be a speechwriter just for the girls. I wanted to do work for the president, and he said, well, it would be about 50-50. It turned out to be more 70-30, but I did get some things in for the president. And as you know, the president has a very distinctive style of speaking. He has certain phrases that he likes to use. He has certain anecdotes that he likes to use. And he seemed very pleased with the things I did for him. I heard him give a little talk at the opening of the Blue Room, which was something that I had prepared for him, and he used the whole thing practically verbatim. And some other things that I did for him where he didn't do really kept more or less to the talking points that had been prepared. So my understanding was that it would be 50-50, 50 for him and 50 for the family. As I say, as it turned out, the girls were very, very active during the campaign. I don't think it was anticipated that they would be that active. Mm-hmm. But it turned out that they were, so I was there and I got most of their stuff. And gradually learned each one had a very distinctive style, things they liked to say, things they didn't like to say. And I gradually learned how to write for both of them and for Mrs. Nixon, who does not like to speak, but when she wants to, she has to. And so I learned how to deal with her, too. She later told me that she was very pleased with the stuff that I had prepared for her, so I was delighted. And Julie, too.
Uh-huh. You had personal contact with
Yes, not as much as I would have liked, but enough to prepare things. Uh-huh. I had the most contact with Julie. Julie was the most active of all of them during the campaign, as far as speaking engagements, but she would just take on anything. And we conversed in person and by phone on what she'd want to say. If the theme was okay after I'd sent it over to her, if she had any suggestions, I would weave them in. And we worked fairly closely together. Mm-hmm. And we still remain friends. She just sent me a little note.
So both times you came to the White House, it had been at your initiative of applying for an opening that you had learned about.
That's right.
Okay. again to Mrs. Armstrong.
For different reasons. The first time, the reason was that I could not just turn this down. It was such a splendid opportunity. Mm-hmm. I had been writing about decision-making and policy-making in the government for 4 years before that as a reporter. And I just felt, well, here's the chance to see it from the inside. And the second time was a combination of circumstances. I probably could have stayed on at DOT, but I felt that since the opportunity was there to go back to the White House and something I was interested in, I thought I'd try and see if I could do that.
Mm-hmm. So what was your area of responsibility when you came to Mrs. Armstrong's staff?
Well, this office, as you may know, is called the Office of Women's Programs. And it was set up by Mrs. Armstrong with the President's approval. It's the first time the White House has had such an office, which deals exclusively with women's concerns and issues pertain to women in the economy and in the legislative field and so on. So my responsibility basically as director of this office was to maintain liaison with all of the major national women's groups, find out what issues they are interested in, what kinds of programs they are having, how we could be of help to them, how they could be of help to us in terms of the President's program. That was one responsibility. In the early days, Jill was here and she served as a spokeswoman. Most of her work consisted of making speeches and traveling around the country and talking about issues of concern to women and what the administration has done for women. And my work, basically, by mutual agreement, was to be the inside person and direct the day-to-day operations of the office. And the office is very small, as you can see. We have one secretary, Harriet Yudlowsky, whom we hired 2 months after I came. Before that, there was a volunteer here working with Jill, and it was very unfeasible. So we developed in an ad hoc way. At first, we had the responsibility that Barbara Franklin had before to help recruit top-level women. And we found that this is a very full-time job, and we just could not handle it. And we told Mrs. Armstrong this, and she was very well aware that if we were going to do our other work, we couldn't give full-time to that. So a replacement for Barbara was hired, Mrs. Nolan Smith, and she's still here, and that function was given to her. So our other functions developed, as I say, as we go along. We got interested in legislation. We started by hoping for a very ambitious women's rights legislative package to be sent to the Hill by the administration, which would have included changes in the Social Security laws, changes in credit, perhaps even minimum wage. This was before the President had vetoed the minimum wage law, minimum wage for domestics. And we had hoped to weave all of these things into one big package. Well, this we found out quickly was very ambitious and naive of us, because these things were being handled at different times throughout the administration and at different rates, and there were different feelings about all of them. What we ended up, we thought, sending up to the Hill was an excellent thing, and not as big as we would have liked, still very good. And those were amendments to a bill, an existing bill, introduced by Representative Margaret Heckler, which would eliminate discrimination on the basis of sex or marital status in all credit transactions. And as you know, this is a terrible problem, especially for single women, widowed, divorced. They find it very hard to get credit. It's been well documented. And this took about 8 months with various option papers being prepared for the President on how to send it up and so on. But we did manage to get these amendments up there, and they are now on the Hill pending legislation. The amendments would strengthen the bill in that they would give the Attorney General the power to take over, have cases referred to him by various government agencies, and also he would have the power to bring a suit where he saw that pattern and practice of discrimination exists. Before that, the bill did not have this safeguard. We thought this was very important to get the government and the Justice Department in on this. So that was, I think, our biggest accomplishment in the past year. We've had other little accomplishments, such as opening up the White House health facility to women.
Right.
And that, while it may be minor, you know, in legislative terms, was considered a great coup by the women who were interested in this thing. Let's see what else we have. Well, why don't you ask?
When the office was created, who initiated this?
Well,
to create an office for women's affairs.
Well, it came out of Mrs. Armstrong's responsibility for advancing the role of women. That was, when she came on as counsel, that was one of the things the president said he wanted her to do. So she created this office.
Okay. And was there any statement of exactly what this office was to do? I know that it was about the time, and maybe you can pinpoint the time for me, that Barbara Franklin left. So was it initially thought of as a replacement for her office?
No, in no way. It was Barbara's job was to recruit top-level qualified women for policy positions in the government. She may have gotten into other things peripherally. She got it because she dealt with women all the time. She would have had to have been deaf, dumb, and blind had she not gotten into things, but her main priority was this recruitment and placing, although she had to work through the personnel people, but she, and ours was to keep, really, as an ombudsman, I would say, or ombudswoman for women in the White House. They found out we were here, women came to us, they wrote to us, they visited with us to discuss their problems. Anytime we could have help through a government agency, for example, in cases where discrimination cases had been brought, we would write for a status report to the appropriate department to show that we were interested. And these things moved these cases along quite a bit because White House interest does promote a little bit of quick movement in the bureaucracy. We helped a group, an ad hoc group of women's rights people get interviews with Secretary Weinberger and Secretary Brennan and Melvin Laird when he was here to discuss what they considered the priorities for the women of this country. It was a group composed of representatives of across the spectrum politically, from the Women's Political Caucus to the American Association of University Professors. It ranged the spectrum politically and ideologically. And they had gotten together and wanted to speak to these people to make them aware of what they thought the problems were. So we acted as a middleman and things like that. We also keep close liaison with the five advisory committees in government that deal with women's concerns. There is one here in the White House, as you may know, the Advisory Committee on the Economic Role of Women, which the President created in September of 1972. And we arranged a symposium for them in August of last year, dealing with advancing women in industry, and brought in more than 300 business leaders from all over the country to hear talks by business education and government people on what was being done for women in terms of affirmative action and equality and equality of opportunity. And we maintain liaison very closely with the thing at HEW. Secretary's Advisory Committee on the Rights and Responsibilities of Women at HEW. And through them have gotten interested in Title IX, the Education Amendments in 1972, which we worked on very closely with them and with people, the civil rights people in the department. They're still not over here at the White House. They're not final yet, and they haven't been issued for comment, but we have given them suggestions on what should be in them and how they should be written and so on.
Did you work more with government agencies, departments, or commissions than you did with
50-50.
Private organizations?
I would say 50-50, with 50% with the private sector and 50% with government.
And were your primary contacts with the private sector, the large organizations, the American
yes.
Association of University of Women?
Yes, and the project on women sponsored by the American Association of Colleges and Universities. This project is headed by Dr. Bernice Sandler, and we work very closely with her. You see, you really can't separate the private sector from the public, from government, in that you find out, you use the private sector to, let's say, find out what their priorities are, and then you find out what's happening in the government, and you have to, depending on your judgment, balance the two so that you can get a good compromise. And that's basically what we've been doing. So we worked with from both ends and was sort of the fulcrum to make things move.
Did you find that you had to go out and actively seek this liaison with the organizations and with the government agencies concerned with this, or did they end up coming to you with their problems?
In the beginning, we had to seek and tell them we were here. And once they found out we were here, I think that's the most important legacy this office will leave. The fact that there was, if it is continued, fine, I would be delighted. If it's not continued, at least we will have had in, for 1 year in the Nixon administration, something very unique. A place where women could come that they knew was here in the White House, that would listen to them and would try and help them if it was feasible. And this is very unique in government. It's never happened before.
What offices in the White House did you work most frequently with? I'm sure that when you were working on legislative matters, you had to work with Bill Timmons' office.
Timmons' office, Pat O'Donnell. I don't know if you...
Lynn Sketchman.
Yeah. No, you're thinking of O'Connell. Well, anyway, his aide over there.
Parker?
No, not Parker's. O'Connell or O'Donnell. Anyway, his
well,
name.
Who were you? Wait a minute.
In Timmons' office.
Oh, Timmons, okay.
Big blonde fellow. You know, I don't even know if he's still here. I haven't seen him in months.
I
think he might have left. But in any case, he was our main liaison person. With the domestic counsel, with Jim Cavanaugh, a little bit, not too much. With Clausen's office when we wanted to use the White House press facilities, particularly Liz O'Neill. She's been helping us a great deal.
And what about in other departments, any particular people with whom you work most frequently?
Within the White House, you mean?
Well, with in other departments.
Of the White House?
No, I'm sorry, in the executive office.
Oh, well, Stan Scott, we had liaison with him because of one particular case, a firing of somebody at NASA, a woman. And we worked closely with him. And we have really the same responsibilities, in a sense, that he has for the black community. This office has for women, both black, white, yellow, and any color.
Right.
So I've conferred with him many times on techniques that he uses and so on.
Did you do the same thing with the people who are in, have this responsibility for other minority groups? I know that I guess Carl Ascani had probably left by the time
he had, yes, and Fred Slight, who was on Mrs. Armstrong's staff, has been her person for liaison with the Spanish-speaking community through the Cabinet Committee on Spanish-speaking Opportunity. Mm-hmm. But that will end, I understand, because she, an assistant will be hired. Who is it? An assistant to the president. A Spanish-speaking person will be hired shortly to maintain liaison with Spanish-speaking. Mm-hmm. So we did, well, we worked closely with Fred as far as techniques were concerned, compiling lists and the percentages of women in appointed jobs and so on, but not in substance, just in technique.
You had no kind of organized meetings with the people concerned with other minority groups on the on matters of technique and
no
accomplishments in the areas. Were the, well, I guess within your office it was probably a very informal relationship just because of the size of the office. It really consisted
of three. You mean among us? Well, the three of us.
Three people.
Yes. Yes, and I would say very informal and very congenial. About 6 months ago, Dr. Jean Spencer was brought into the office as a consultant. Dr. Spencer is a political scientist and was the chief research person for the Vice President Andrews, former Vice President Andrews' staff. And she was, her main priority really was to work up plans for a White House and Civil Service Commission sponsored conference on women. And she worked on this long and hard and has now left. We don't know whether the conference will come off or not. Did get a tentative no on it for this year, but it still might come on. But in any case, she is now left to return to the University of Maryland.
Did you report directly to Mrs. Armstrong?
Yes.
And were your files integrated in with the files of her entire staff, or did you keep
separate files? No, we have separate files here. The only files that I think are kept in the next room by Beth Gordon, who is the sort of executive secretary of the staff, are speeches that we prepared for Mrs. Armstrong. All of the memos, all of the notes and so on are right here, and they did not get integrated with the staff.
What was your involvement with the other activities in Mrs. Armstrong's areas, or were you kind of an independent office within her larger office?
Well, as you know, she had, or still has, I believe, the responsibility to be the president's personal representative for the bicentennial celebration. And we are involved, and were involved very heavily, with the women's program coordinator, Perdita Houston, at the bicentennial administration. And helping her as much as we could maintain liaison. We exchanged lists of people, women's leaders and so on. We went to meetings that she called. She came to meetings that we called because we wanted to keep abreast of what was going on in the bicentennial planning, and also is useful to us to know whom she contacted on various occasions and for what, and what kind of success she had, if not success.
Did Pam Powell on Mrs. Armstrong's staff have any work in the women's area?
Nothing substantive, no. She is working on youth and was Mrs. Armstrong's staff person for the bicentennial. But now that the new law has been passed and Mr. Warner is new administrator, I don't know whether Pam still has that responsibility for bicentennial, but she certainly has it for youth.
Where are your files going to be left when you depart the staff?
Well, here, I guess.
Okay. Do you know if anyone is going to replace you?
I have no idea.
Mrs. Radcliffe's house is still working?
No, she resigned March 18th.
Well, when
You did mention that she did most of the speaking. Did you do any speaking?
Yes, I did quite a bit. At first, I was reluctant to do it because I never had done any public speaking. But after the butterflies disappeared, and I did my first speech here in the White House Theater to some young people from Arkansas, that was the worst experience. Gradually, the ease came to it, and I found that I like it. Mm-hmm. And I like it very much. And, I've done about 8 or 9 different speaking things. I should have done more, but I was a coward. I was afraid to go out. But once I started, I found that I liked it. My last speech will be this Saturday before a group here in Washington. The last, most recent one was out in Indianapolis to the Women in Communications chapter out there in Indianapolis, and talk about women, of course. And
you write your own speeches, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Have you continued to write speeches for Mrs. Armstrong or any other members of the staff since this has been your area?
I did a few for her, yes, but she speaks so often and so frequently. This is a full-time job, and both Jill and I and Jean Spencer have been urging that she get a full-time speechwriter on her staff because this is a requirement that has to be, someone has to be there to do only that.
She uses the president's speechwriting staff?
She has been doing that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you write any for Jill Bartlett's house?
No, Jill wrote her own. I helped her with some, but mostly her own.
And speaking of speech drafts, both for the speeches that you worked on when you were on the speech writing staff and for those that you've worked on when you were here, did you keep a file with all drafts and revisions and revisions and revisions?
I think most of the first drafts were thrown out. Of course, when I was on the speech writing staff, those were given back to the archives before I left, so everything that I ever wrote on that staff is somewhere here. Here, my files are a mess. They really are. And I've got some, I think Harriet has some drafts that I've done of speeches. Sometimes I spoke off the cuff, and I didn't, I used just notes. So there was no written thing prepared, and I throw the notes away.
Is there any file of your speaking engagements?
I don't know. You have to ask Harry. You want me to ask?
Well, if it's here, it should go with your files when they eventually.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'll all go, the proper things, because I'm not going to take anything with me. Just a few personal notes and so on.
Do you know of any areas that you worked on which you feel should be talked about or which you would like to talk about in more depth than Nixon Oral History Project? And again, as I said earlier, particularly areas which you feel are not well documented in your files.
Well, it's hard to say. You see, the women's movement is, when you talk about documentation, there are reams of literature and so on what women really want and what is going on today. I think this is a major movement for social change in this country. And the only thing that I would want to see done is that this office be continued under succeeding administrations or something like it, because there is a great need for a place in the White House that women know will be open to them, to listen to them, to counsel them, not as a psychiatrist type of counseling, but to teach them about how politics really works and how to go about using the political system to gain their ends. This is the thing, I think it's really needed, and my only hope is that it does continue. I really believe it's an essential for any White House staff, regardless of who is president. And I hope whoever listens to this in 100 years was saying, well, we've got one too. Because this is really a must, I think. We were pioneers here. We started out, we had to develop on a very pragmatic basis. And we had a lot of resistance. And this office will continue to have a lot of resistance. Here in the White House staff, maybe in the public mind. But I think the women's movement is here to stay. And an office like this should be here to stay, too.
Hopefully until it's no longer needed.
Exactly. And that may be 100 years, it may be 10 years, I don't know. But there sure is a need now. And I would hope that issues can get explored in greater depth by whoever is the principal of this office than has been the case heretofore. Mrs. Armstrong is a great person. She is into too much, in my opinion, to be able to give her interest and support to all of the things that we would like to do, because 10 people couldn't do what she is doing. And so being that her responsibilities are so broad in scope and so many things, women being only one of them, I don't think that she was able to provide the effective backing that this office needs.
Who do you think will take over your responsibilities until they hire a new person?
No idea.
Well, that's Mrs. Ruckelshaus gone, that'll be kind of difficult.
Well, I really feel a little uncertain about the future of the office, and that's why I say so strongly, I hope it does continue. I don't know Mrs. Armstrong's own plans, you know, so it certainly might hinge on that. Although if she leaves, I think it should be integrated into the domestic council or some such structure, which is a fairly institutionalized structure within the White House, so that issues of the kinds that we have been into will not just get lost and fall through the cracks. The domestic council under this administration would be a very good place to have a woman's advocate or someone there who would look over legislation and deal from the point of view of women's concerns.
Where are you going when you leave this?
I haven't made up my mind yet. A couple of things I may do.
Do you have a permanent address where you might be reached over
sure.
The next 10 years or so?
Well, 10 years, I don't know.
Well, a family address is often the best thing, because...
Well, I think I'll give you my address here in town, which is 1530 33rd Street Northwest. 2007.
And do you know of any newspaper articles or any published articles describing your operation, which are fairly accurate and might
yes.
be helpful to someone?
The thing that
through?
I think it gives the best description of this office is the statement that we provided to the Joint Economic Committee last year when Mrs. Griffith held her hearings on the economic role of women. And it's listed as Statement of Office of Women's Programs, Statement of White House Office of Women's Programs.
That would be in the congressional record.
That would be in the hearing transcript.
I'm sure I do. Let me just check. Oh, here, yes. This is the thing, and it's on page 466. I can't read, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, I'll do that. Okay. Do you have an extra copy of this?
We may have a Xerox of it. I don't know if we've got a copy of the book.
Well, I'll just take down the citation here. It should be very easy to get from GPO. The other thing is, do you have a biographical sketch or resume?
I've got both.
That we could put in the file.
Sure. Harriet has that.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to add? As I said, right now we're trying to get just a very basic outline and trying to pinpoint people in the staff organization so that when one goes back to the files, it will have a little bit more meaning. One thing I don't think I did ask you for the record, your title has been staff assistant.
Staff assistant, and my title for this office is director of the Office of Women's Programs.
Okay.
The only thing that I really want to stress very much, and I don't know, as again, I'm uncertain about the future of this office, that it should explore, first of all, I think the idea of a White House conference is an excellent idea when the climate is right for it, and that should be pursued by whoever is going to take over here. Second thing is that there is no substitute for meeting people and exploring issues in depth if you're really interested in anything, any subject. And I think whoever does get interested in this thing, if this is continued in the White House, has to be concerned about the depth to which they will go into issues, and in doing so, have the backing of their principal. This is the most important thing. To be able to do anything well, you have to know the subject inside out, and you have to be able to move with no reservations at all on the part of your principal. So these understandings have to be established if this office is ever to be effective. It could very easily be window dressing, and sometimes I have thought that, well, maybe it is just window dressing. But when I really think and ask myself, well, has it all been worthwhile for the last year? I say, yes, it has, because they know we're here, and that's the most important thing.
One thing maybe I should have pursued, and you briefly mentioned it again, was the work that Dr. Spencer did on the White House.
Yes.
Was that the only project that she worked on while she
This was her main priority project. She worked on this for, it was pending for 3 months. And she continued to maintain liaison with women throughout the government who might be prospective advisory people for this conference. They used to come in here and we'd talk and decide on the priorities. I would say that was her main priority here. She did, she did some research on Title IX as well. Another thing I forgot to mention, that what we did was we were responsible for the language in the President's State of the Union message on the rights of women, 1974 State of the Union message. We were responsible for two proclamations. We wrote them here. One was the Women's Equality Day proclamation, which is right behind you there, which came out the anniversary of the suffrage amendment. Last year, and we were responsible for the International Women's Year proclamation, which the President issued on January 30, 1974, which made the U.S. the first country in the world to officially announce its participation in International Women's Year 1975.
By that, you mean that you worked through the normal channels in the White House to get things formally issued?
Exactly. We drafted them. We didn't work through the normal channels, or they would never have gotten out.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We drafted them and submitted them to Gergen Shop, and they got out all right. And we were very proud of the fact that the International Women's Year proclamation got out in time to be read at the UN session on the Status of Women Commission, which was, it ended on January 30th, and I phoned the text of the proclamation out shortly after the President signed it to New York so that they could read it. They took it down in shorthand, and they were just jubilant. Our delegation said that this was the best thing that had happened during the whole UN session. So that was a very nice thing that had happened.
I'm sure that helped to promote the knowledge that this office too existed.
Yes, it did, I think.
Interesting.
We've worked also closely with the State Department. The latest project that has been, well, two things. One was we got Henry Kissinger to issue a memorandum on the Vietnamese War Orphans. We got interested in this because some private groups had approached us, and the plight of these orphans is a very terrible thing, and there was a lot of red tape, we found out, through the AID people, with conflicting government agencies trying to get into different parts of the program to help them, and the South Vietnamese government resisting aid from abroad for this and making it go, they wanted to do it their own way, in other words. So we drafted a memorandum, worked with Chuck Wardell here and General Haig's staff to get this through, or General Scowcroft, in which Henry Kissinger asked for cooperation among the various government agencies dealing with this problem, the Justice Department, HEW, the State Department, and it finally got signed and just came out 2 weeks ago. So we're quite pleased with that, and I hope that it helps unsnarl some of the red tape. And in it, he mentioned the President's interest in getting this problem resolved quickly.
Did you try and get administration spokesmen to talk on the subject of women? And cabinet secretaries, or did you propose speech inserts or
No, we did not. No, we preferred not to because we didn't want them to feel that they were being programmed. We have enough resistance around here when we want to get something about women out. And we felt that our main fight is here. And once we get established here, then we could work with the cabinet secretaries. The only way in which we worked with them directly was to refer cases which had come to our attention and get status reports and get some action. And we'd always work through the Office of the Secretary, send letters and phone calls and so on cases that we were interested in. And so with the various agencies like the EEOC and the Women's Bureau and the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, where this kind of casework can be pushed ahead if we think it's a worthwhile thing, by writing a letter or by a phone call. So in that way, that's the way we work with the agencies.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.